Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
We have a few companies already from the U.S. and other parts of the world operating in Sierra Leone, which means we have a climate that permits the establishment and functioning.
U.S. President Joe Biden meets with Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio as part of the U.S. Africa Leaders Summit.
And even this afternoon, as we are here, they are still meeting some of the potential investors. At this stage, I cannot really say they have sealed the end deal. However, the way they were informing me, the discussions are very much promising.
The Deputy Prime Minister of Namibia calls on entrepreneurs to develop business activities to take advantage of the investment opportunities in the U.S. and beyond.
So we really like to build the Lesotho's economy, because as a new government, our main priority is to build the productivity of the Lesotho.
And Lesotho's foreign minister says the new administration in the Southern African Kingdom seeks improved relations with Washington. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. U.S. President Joe Biden met with Sierra Leonean President Julius Maada Bio as part of the just-concluded U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit in Washington, D.C. Key among the discussions are the strengthening of relations between Washington and Freetown, the respect and protection of human rights, and the coming general election in June. The meeting between Biden and Bio, observers say, will help boost investor confidence in the West African country. Officials of the Sierra Leone government say several factors may have paved the way for Bio's invitation to the White House, including his commitment to good governance, respect for the rule of law, the repeal of the criminal libel law, and the removal of the death penalty. The meeting came as Bio signs into law the Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment Bill, which aims to strengthen their role in government and the private sector. For more about the meeting at the White House and the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, I sat down for an interview with Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio. This is part one of our conversation.
Well, I would say it's a very constructive meeting, because it's basically talking about resetting our relationship between the United States of America and Africa. There is a lot of history between the two, and there has been a drop in the relationship for a while, and we think this is not good for international relations. It's not good for development, multilateralism, and the many things that we want to do at the highest levels. So we came together to discuss how we can resuscitate this relationship. And of course, there are concerns about what is happening in Africa, especially with regards to security, threats to security, the economic crisis, the resurgence of military coups, etc., and how we can help to deal with these challenges, global challenges.
So you attended the U.S.-Africa Leadership Summit. A lot of bilateral agreement and business deals were done. What was your impression? Were your expectations met? And what are you taking back to Sierra Leone to help the people of Sierra Leone?
Well, I think that's one of the most important things for high-level meetings of this nature, a summit. It is not just what we say in the halls, but what happens in the little rooms around. I had the opportunity again to meet with MCC and to consolidate our relationship with the MCC, that is going to spend at least nothing less than $350 million as grant to Sierra Leone. There are a few hiccups with the compact, but of course we amicably went through those, and we are now on the same page. We have met several other groups. I'm just from a meeting with other groups that are interested in Sierra Leone. Of course, they are very mindful of the fact that we go to elections in about 6 months, and a lot of companies are always a little jittery or careful, mindful, you know, of the fact that elections can be quite disruptive. But I've told them that we are going to keep the peace. It's the stability, and because we are paying more attention to development rather than politics, we don't want any slowdown in activities once they concern development. So there are quite a lot of interesting discussions, meetings that I wouldn't say have come to fruition at this point in time, but they are very promising, and I'm happy that I had those meetings.
Mr. President, will Sierra Leone be ready, or is Sierra Leone ready for business, especially investors, those that you spoke with? Are there mechanisms or measures implemented to ensure that when they come in, their business interests and their investments will be protected? And will there be conflict resolution mechanisms? If there's a conflict, it could be resolved amicably?
You're talking about the business environment,
right?
The climate.
Right.
We have worked on that, and we continue to pay keen attention to the business environment. My business is to make sure that I attract some of the most patient investors who will go there to invest for the mutual benefit of our country and also their own corporate entities. We have a few companies already from the US and other parts of the world operating in Sierra Leone, which means that we have a climate that permits the establishment and functioning. So we of course we've had challenges or conflicts, and we are able to resolve them. Especially as recent as I think 2 years ago, we had a serious challenge with an American company mining iron ore, and we were able to find a solution. I just saw them as a matter of fact. So which means we are ready. They are going in, they are operating, and where we've had challenges, we'll find a way out. That is part of, conflicts are part of human relationship, and our business is to make sure that we incorporate into our governance structure mechanisms that can always deal with them as and when they arise. But we are ready. We continue to work on the business climate. We have put very progressive policies in place. And anything that will make us attractive as a destination for foreign direct investment, we will do, because that is what caters for the needs of our people best.
Mr. President, a lot of civil society groups and even the First Lady have been expressing concern about gender-based violence. The First Lady has championed the cause of Hands Off Our Girls campaign. I understand there's a bill that is waiting for you to accentuate, to sign, the Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment Bill. What entails in this bill? Because when you sign it, it becomes law. What do you want this to achieve? And how would this protect victims of gender-based violence?
What is contained in the bill, it's all goodies for women. It actually lays the foundation for the liberation of our women to close the gender gap. That is the best way to put it. Of course, it took us a long time as a male society dominantly to accept that. It's been in parliament for 8 months, but we got it out, and in the form and manner in which we want it. It basically gives 30% of representation in parliament to women, and in all spheres of governance, even in corporate governance. So it is now incumbent upon us to really see how we can implement that to make sure that we start to close the gender gap. It is the gender gap, closing the gender gap is what this bill is really about. And that is what we have started. Before today, they did not have the chance. Women, we are not considered equal partners in development. And what we are saying is that you cannot say you are serious about development and you lock up more than 50% of your energy in the kitchen or somewhere else, and then expect to make progress.
Julius Maada Bio is the president of Sierra Leone. Join us on the Christmas edition of Nightline Africa for the concluding part of our talk. The Deputy Prime Minister of Namibia is calling on entrepreneurs to develop business activities and required products to take advantage of the investment opportunities in the U.S. and beyond. Mrs. Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa, who is also Namibia's Minister for International Relations and Cooperation, says the just-ended U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit opens the doors for increased trade between the U.S., Namibia, and the rest of Africa. Namibia's delegation, which was led by President Hage Geingob, included Nandi Ndaitwa, as well as business and women and senior government officials. Nandi Ndaitwa was recently re-elected as the vice president of Namibia's governing Southwest Africa People's Organization, or SWAPO. The election victory paves the way to represent SWAPO as its presidential candidate in the 2024 general election, the first woman to represent the party as presidential candidate. In a wide-ranging interview with me, Nandi Ndaitwa describes the major takeaways from the summit for Namibia, as well as what her recent election victory means for women in Africa. Here's part one of the interview.
So it was really a useful exercise of engagement that looked at different sectors of economy, as well as well-being of the people, looking also at the issues that were discussed. They were very inclusive. The issue of peace and security, the issues of governance and capacity building, institutional development, because all this is what you need if you can really make a difference in the lives of your people in as far as prosperity and well-being is concerned.
Madam Ndaitwa, for Namibia, what will be the major takeaways of this summit? Because I understand there were bilateral meetings, the U.S. president held meetings with and dinner with all the heads of state, including the Namibian president. So what will be the major takeaways? Because some business deals, I understand, were also struck for investors to want to look at Namibia and other African countries to want to come and invest in these countries, including Namibia.
So the takeaway for Namibia specifically is that there are those who are interested to invest on the critical areas of concern to us. One, we are talking about Namibia to contribute to Agenda 2063, which is the AU agenda of industrialization. Mm-hmm. And for you to industrialize, you need energy. So that is why we really want those who have indicated the seriousness to invest in the energy sector. We want to continue engaging them until we really find a common understanding. Of course, I'm sure you are aware that now the big issue coming to Namibia is the green hydrogen, which is really a focus internationally. And we hope as we go, the implementation will really make an impact in our country. The issues of climate change keep coming up, rightly so. And Namibia is one country that is seriously affected by the impact of climate change. And therefore, we need to have programs of adaptation that enable our people to get out of poverty.
Were the expectations of Namibia met ahead of your planned trip to participate in this summit? Were the expectations met?
Because we had a government delegation and we had a business delegation. A government delegation had what we call the Namibia Investment Promotion Board. And when I was talking to them, even today, they are giving me an impression that to a certain extent, they had very good engagement And even this afternoon, as we are here, they are still meeting some of the potential investors. At this stage, I cannot really say they have sealed the end deal. However, the way they were informing me, the discussions are very much promising. And that is what we are looking at. And that is the board, which is specifically having a task to market Namibia as an investment destination.
Mrs. Netumbo Nandi Ndaitwa is Namibia's Deputy Prime Minister and Minister for International Relations and Cooperation. She spoke with me from here in Washington. Join us on the Christmas edition of Nightline Africa for the concluding part of our talk. Lesotho's foreign minister says the newly installed administration in the Southern African Kingdom seeks improved relations with Washington. Lejone Mpotuani says the renewal of the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA, will significantly improve the living conditions of the kingdom's citizens. The $300 million from the MCC, officials say, will help to reduce poverty through economic growth and will help resolve challenges in the health, finance, and agricultural sectors. The foreign minister was part of the delegation led by newly installed Prime Minister Sam Matekani to participate in the recently concluded U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit. The delegation also met with U.S. lawmakers while in Washington, D.C. For more reaction to the summit, meetings with U.S. lawmakers and relations between Washington and Maseru, I sat down with Lesotho's foreign minister, Lejone Mpotuani.
The U.S. and Lesotho has got long-lasting relations. We've got the Peace Corps. We've been there in Lesotho for so long. We also have the AGOA relationship between USA and Africa. And we also have the MCC, or the Millennium Challenge Account, that has just been renewed in Lesotho. So these are the three main issues that have been happening in Lesotho, between Lesotho and USA. And we are really here as the government of Lesotho to renew the bilateral cooperation between Lesotho and USA.
What are your expectations of the summit, and what do you think the lessons will be to take back and implement in the Kingdom of Lesotho?
Yeah, I think the lessons is mainly about us reviewing the relationship between Lesotho and the USA. What challenges have we encountered in the past? And as a new government, what would we really prioritize in order to ensure that we've got the long-lasting relations between the two nations? And I believe we are here as the African leadership. So we also have to learn from the rest of our sister countries who are also here, in order to see the kind of opportunities that they took in their bilateral relations with the USA, how they can grow their economies, and how can they take advantage of the financial and the technical assistance that they can get from the United Nations agencies, and also from the US as a country. So we really like to build the Lesotho's economy, because as a new government, our main priority is to build the productivity of the Lesotho, and focusing mainly on the agriculture, also the water sector, using our water resource for the renewable energy, using our water resource to produce trout and export trout all over the world, including the US, because I'm here right now and I'm missing my trout. So I believe we'll be having great discussions, and also attract investors into Lesotho in order to explore the hydropower and also explore the fishery that we can have in Lesotho.
As a foreign minister, where do you want to see the relationship between Washington and Maseru?
As a foreign minister, my main responsibility is to ensure that we have got long-lasting relations between Lesotho and Washington, and I believe it is also my role to extend the relations. I'll be very happy to see more investors coming to Maseru from the U.S. I'll also be very happy to see more people from Lesotho coming to the U.S., getting scholarships as students, and also getting jobs in the international organizations based here in the U.S. So as the foreign minister, I should always look for the opportunities for Basotho here in the U.S., and also try to also facilitate a cooperation between the Lesotho traders and also the U.S. So I'll be really delighted to see more investors going to Maseru, because Lesotho is yet to prosper.
Before we go, as the new kid on the block in SADC, what do you want to see now that you are the new kid on the block?
we'll all agree that Lesotho is the hub of the water resource. And I believe in the past governments, there has been underutilization of the water resource. And we believe we can explore the hydropower. So as the source of energy, as the renewable energy, as Lesotho, we want to maximize production of the hydropower and enable business. Because if you have more hydropower, that means we'll be reducing the cost of doing business in the region. Because that power will not only be served to Lesotho, it will also serve the entire region of SADC. The other very important aspect is also to build a good governance, to build a culture of accountability in government, because we have seen that in government, people don't fulfill their tasks and people are not held to account. So the Right Honourable the Prime Minister has committed to the nation, to the Basotho nation, that he needs a performance contract as a Prime Minister. And he will also report back to the community what he has been doing as the Prime Minister. And he's also going to hold our people, our government officials, starting with us as the ministers, to account on what are we doing. So if you are building a culture of accountability in the civil service, you are definitely going to improve performance of the government. And when you improve performance of the government, you will definitely attract more investors into the economy. You will build or mobilize local funding, because we'll be building our own economy. So if we will be able to build a Lesotho economy, it means really our people will prosper, which is the current situation now that our country is suffering. We've got low revenue basis, which we would like to target and improve so much on. So building productivity in Lesotho, in agriculture, and also in renewable energy, we believe that is the area to focus on.
Lejone Mpotjwane is Lesotho's foreign minister. He spoke with me from here in Washington. In Nigeria, a newly released survey shows Peter Obi, former governor of Anambra State and presidential candidate of the opposition Labour Congress Party, will win the coming February presidential election. Conducted by the ANAP Foundation, the finding also found that former Lagos State Governor Asiwaju Ahmed Bola Tinubu, presidential candidate of the ruling All People's Congress or APC, came in second. Former Vice President Atiku Abubakar from the main opposition People's Democratic Party or PDP was third, and Rabiu Kwankwaso of the New People's Party or NNPP came in at a distant fourth. It is the second survey of the presidential race conducted in the last 4 months. But supporters of both the APC and PDP dismiss the latest research, saying it is yet another poll which is not a true reflection of the presidential contest. For analysis and the latest political development, I reach Jide Ojo. He is a columnist for The Punch, a major newspaper in Nigeria.
It's a welcome development. I think it shows that Nigerians are on track to effect the kind of change they desire. But you know what polls are? They are just indicators. It doesn't necessarily mean things will eventually turn out the way the polls are showing. It's still some 60 days to the polls. And as it is said in election parlance or in political circle, 24 hours is a lot of time in politics. So the good news is that Peter Obi is making waves, and if he could keep on the momentum, Nigeria may have a revolutionary outcome in 2023.
Recently, his campaign manager, Okupe, was convicted of money laundering and all that. Will that affect his chances?
That was why I said 60 days, 2 months, to election is not exactly a day of election. So a lot of things could still happen, which can turn the tide against Peter Obi. And right now, what we see is heartwarming, shows that Nigerian youths are ready for change. If things are consolidated, we could be on our way to having an upset, political upset in 2023, similar to what happened with the emergence of Emmanuel Macron in France when he established EMMAT and caused an upset in the election that brought him to power in the first instance.
Do you think that these latest polls, which show Peter Obi leading, are a true reflection of what is on the ground? What is the reaction you're getting from the Nigerian youth? Because some people say the youth cannot be trusted on the day of poll. And usually they make a lot of noise on social media platforms, but when it comes to the day of polling, they usually do not do that.
Truly speaking, if you look at the figures, the reason why I will not even be able to stick out my neck and say, oh, we have a new president coming, is that if you look at the column for undecided voter, as well as those who refused to declare who they will vote for in that poll, totally they amounted to 52% of the sample size. And the sample size is between 1,000 and 3,000 people. We have a population of about 93.5 million who are expected to vote in 2023. So, rationally speaking, one cannot be too certain that, okay, 52% who said I'm not yet decided, or that I will not tell you who I'm going to vote for. You cannot ignore that majority, because if you had votes together, one is 23%, one is 19%. If you add the two together, it gives you 52%. So if out of 48% of the response and a majority of whom are youth, you now have a Peter Obi leading by 23%, coming second with Ashu Adibola and Tinubu coming second with 13%. And Atiku Abaka coming to the 10%. You cannot be too certain that this will be the final reflection on the election day. So it's not about trusting the youth. And there could be many other dynamics that could happen that may spoil the fun for those who feel that Peter Obi may be cruising to victory. Like the Opupe case you cited earlier, whose conviction came a couple of days back. That was a real shock. That Doyin Okupe happens to be former presidential aide with Goodluck Jonathan, when President Goodluck Jonathan was in power. And now he's been convicted of money laundering. Of course, he did the needful by stepping down as the Director General of the Peter Obi campaign organization. But that's a major dent on that platform, because people are going to continue to reference that as, oh, Peter Obi or his team or the Labour Party is not as saintly as they are trying to make it look like they are a different brand of politicians.
Jide Ojo is a columnist for The Punch, a major newspaper in Nigeria. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. In Liberia, the opposition Alternative National Congress says it will continue to demand accountability from President George Weah and his administration. The party says it is a violation of the constitution for the government to refuse to provide information about the cost of President Weah's recent trip abroad that lasted more than 40 days. This after the opposition party organized a recent demonstration it themed "We Tire Suffering," which is loosely translated as "We Are Tired of the Ongoing Suffering." The suffering, organizers say, is due to the poor prevailing economic conditions and corruption in public institutions. But supporters of the government reject the criticisms. They say external factors affecting the economy is being experienced even by wealthier nations.
They accuse the opposition party of being unpatriotic and using current challenges to make the government unpopular. Alexander Cummings, leader of the Alternative National Congress and possible presidential candidate in the coming elections, tells me that his group will continue to demand accountability from President Weah's administration.
We organize this rally, Peter, to communicate to President Weah and his government the fact that our people are suffering. We titled the rally, "We Tire Suffering," because of the mismanagement of the country. Liberians are worse off than they were 5 years ago. Civil servants are not getting paid regularly. Civil servant salaries were reduced. Healthcare workers, police officers, nurses, everything is going backward in Liberia, Peter. And the president leaves on almost a 50-day trip, went to the World Cup, just a boondoggle around the world.
But Mr. Cummings, the prevailing economic conditions in Liberia, all other countries are facing similar economic challenges. High inflation, high food prices, goods and services are pretty high everywhere in the world. So it's not unique to Liberia.
Because the circumstances prior to the Ukrainian war, situation was deteriorating. Our economy was performing worse relative to Sierra Leone, to Guinea, to the Ivory Coast. So the Ukrainian-Russian war and the other factors only made our situation even worse than it was. But the prevailing conditions, the underlying conditions already existed prior to the prevailing situations around the world. But beyond that, though, when your people are suffering, whether it's your fault or not, you set the example as the leader. You let them know you're also sacrificing, that you're trying to make a difference for them, that is not them alone. And the point we're trying to make is, one, the conditions existed prior to the prevailing economic environment globally. But beyond that, the president is not setting the example. The president is out partying, having fun, doing stuff when the people are suffering. So I think that's the difference.
But the president's trip abroad, his supporters say, are legitimate because, one, he left somebody in charge as constitutionally mandated. He was recently here at the U.S. Africa Leadership Summit where bilateral agreements were made.
It is unique because of the length of time he was away from the country. I believe, other than one exception in the world, no president leaves his country, particularly given the prevailing economic environment, no matter the reason, for the length of time the president was away. Talk about the summit in the U.S. Many African countries that attended, Togo, Sierra Leone in the neighborhood, Cote d'Ivoire, all came away with MCC commitments, with all the commitments from the Americans. President Weah came back with nothing. So if you look at the region, if you look at other countries who heads of states attended that conference that he went to, which he legitimately should have gone to, no question about it. But they came back with something to show. He didn't come back with anything. And again, the challenges in the country, Peter, existed prior to the world conditions changing. And as a leader, I believe you set the example. You demonstrate to your people that you care. You demonstrate to your people that you understand the challenges, and you don't leave the country for almost 50 days. And come back with nothing tangible to show. The other point is, by our law, the president should disclose how much was spent on this trip. It shouldn't be a state secret. They still have not told us how much this trip cost the Liberian taxpayer.
But Mr. Cummings, some people are saying you are just playing politics as an opposition leader, trying to take advantage of the situation.
I respond to that by saying, just because you put somebody in charge as constitutionally mandated, does that make it right? Is that the right thing to do for the country, given the prevailing economic conditions? Is it right to spend the amount of money that's alleged that was spent on this trip, given the environment? It's not about playing politics. It's about the conditions on the ground in Liberia. By every measurable fact, Peter, our country is going backwards by all the indexes. It's a fact.
Some people are saying the rampant or routine demonstrations and protests are losing their effectiveness, and that you guys are just playing politics. After these protests, what's next?
We will continue to make demands that the president leads our country in the right way. We will continue to demand that the president discloses the cost of this trip. We will continue to demand that all of the monies that have been misappropriated, that is explained. This is our right to do so. This is not about politics or not playing politics. When a people are suffering, they have a right to ask their leaders how they're spending the time, how they're spending the resources, and it's not about politics necessarily. Yes, I make no apology. I'm in opposition. But holding the current government accountable is something we should do.
Alexander Cummings is leader of the Alternative National Congress. He spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. In Uganda, the Constitutional Court has ruled that the trial of civilians in military courts is illegal and orders that ongoing criminal cases are held in the appropriate branch of the legal system. Local media reports mixed reaction from human rights defenders and opposition political parties. They say while some groups welcome the court's decision, others say it's not likely to lead to the respect of human rights of those who oppose the administration. For reaction to the Constitutional Court's ruling, I reach Gawai Ategule. He is a prominent human rights lawyer and a prolific legal writer.
This is not the first time that the Constitutional Court is ruling that the trial of civilians in the court-martial is illegal. We have previously had a decision to the same effect, that was Kabazi Goruka Michael versus Attorney General. It said exactly the same thing. Now, what happened was that the court at that time said that all trials of civilians should stop because they're unconstitutional. Now, the Attorney General goes upstairs in court, that is to the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in Uganda. And they appeal the decision of the Constitutional Court. Now, pending the hearing of the appeal, the Attorney General, who is the government's chief legal advisor and representative, also applied for a stay of execution. In other words, an interim order that puts the Constitutional Court ruling at bay or in abeyance until, sorry, the order of the Constitutional Court in abeyance until the appeal had been or has been determined by the Supreme Court.
Gawa, are you saying that the determination by the Constitutional Court that the trial of civilians in a military court is illegal does not necessarily do anything for human rights defenders like yourself?
In the immediate, the reality, it does not really, because like I said, the political realities dictate otherwise. We're in a very sad set of affairs where the judiciary has been properly captured by the executive, and they simply will want to understand what the president wants, and they'll do exactly that. That is the sad set of affairs.
So where do things go from here if a constitutional court has said something, has ruled, and that ruling is not being obeyed? Where do things go from here then?
Peter, I will tell you an answer that I usually reserve for questions of this kind. If you've listened to me before, you might have had this before, that unless and until Uganda gets a change of government, until we get Mr. Yoweri Museveni back to looking after his cows in his country home in Rasutura, nothing much is going to change, because this is a military government. They do what they want because they have the guns. So we're essentially hostages in our own country. The rule of law has been set aside. There is pretense of law in as far as it suits them. But every time the law doesn't suit them, then they simply set it aside in one way or another, either directly through bullying and imposing their brute force with guns in a show of military might and force, or subtly like going to the judiciary to have underhand meetings where they communicate what they would like to happen, and then the judiciary also does exactly what they're being asked to do. We have always pointed out that the Chief Justice, we do not think, I mean, he's a close friend of the president, and that presents a conflict of interest. You cannot have a Chief Justice who is a very close friend and former lawyer of the president heading the judiciary, and then you expect that he's going to make decisions that are essentially an affront to the interest of the president, decisions that are adverse to the political interest, the higher political interest and the intent of the president.
Gawai Ategule is a prominent human rights lawyer and a prolific legal writer. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Like I just don't care. Clubbing like I just don't care. If you wanna go, call my number, maybe go together. If you wanna go, call my number, maybe go together. Mama know the, Papa know the, them are calling, them I know where we are. Mama know the, Papa know the, them are calling, them I know where we are. We are having fun all night. We are chilling, chilling, doing plenty things, yeah. Having fun all night. We are dancing, chilling, doing plenty. Yeah. If you're still at home, I'm so sorry, you don't know what you're missing. Yeah. If you know they're here, I'm so sorry, cause you play on a long thing. If you wanna go, call my number, maybe go together. If you wanna go, call my number, maybe go together. Mama know the, Papa know the, them are calling, them I know where we are. Mama know the, Papa know the, them are calling, them I know where we are. We are having fun all night. We are chilling, chilling, doing plenty things, yeah. Having fun all night. We are dancing, chilling, doing plenty. Where them boys say and them girls say, if you feeling it, why not rock the body? See, I'm here now, and we dancing, chilling, drinking, everybody happy. Ooh, la 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 la. La 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 la. We are having fun all night. We are chilling, chilling, doing plenty things, yeah. Having fun all night. We are dancing, chilling, doing plenty things, yeah. Mama know this, Papa know this, them a calling, them a know where we are. Mama know this, Papa know this, them a calling, them a know where we are.
everybody's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine.
Don't gotta say oh tito, bedu meja be mosquito. Mo fellow oju daddy mi, atura la todo daddy mi. Kinu wa maju tobari mi, aya golona fukari mi. Inu la omo oju la yi, jungle wa nobody mi. Meanwhile mo kowo ye akari, ibile obi o pari. We talking international money, yeah. Ewa be atwani be, mo go fellow oju daddy mi. Kirora ma se faji mi, yeah.
Everything is nice, the body's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine.
That's why they call me a butter. Low top, no show my butter. Kito blue, but why you got her? Only yeah, come on me, Jogumi. Shots, hands on Jojumi. Like my alarm, only mummy. The shell, you are could sue me. But what got to my baby, look for me. Oh, you're me, love, I want to be boomy. I laugh here, I thought of it for me. Like so, you are you, baboomy. Oh, what you can you really shit? Oh, you are the come, I lose shit. You want to come, I leave, okay, quick. I mean, it's to be the whole back with.
Everything is nice, the body's banging. The time is right, I see the money coming. I just the bright, now God they make me shine.
Na nitakuwa wa furaha. Nipe tafadhali nikuonjeshe wewe utataka kubanduka. Penzi langu nikikuonjesha kama sio wewe nani tena? Hakuna kama wewe maishani. Wewe utataka kubanduka. Penzi langu nikikuonjesha kama sio wewe nani tena? Hakuna kama wewe maishani.
Sema jua kali ananyesha baada ya kisoteso mimi najua jota nitatesa pia mejaribu chunguza mvua gani inawaka nyota ndogo ukiangalia juu hewani inarushia kamba nivutia pa chini kwa mchanga wewe yako msichana sitaki usiku ati mapenzi unionjeshe nipe yote ndamani kwa balcony ndende usishuke hata hapo nje tunaonekana na wasenge sababu leta fanya nikupa penzi langu bebe itafanya wasenge wachana shikwa sichana wanze katika genge mwili zetu wawili zipate joto vile zimeshikana na mimi nakwambia tulia hapo ndani na mwaga pikana saka nitere mkoko chini uza chichazia kijana hakuna mali naenda niko naye milele nimekubeba mkononi jo balkoni ongezeka kelele wananiwa na mgongo mkisema
kuwa wakipenda
maziwa
kuwa ya nyesha
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Nicole Beckford, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, the frown on the face of the goat will not stop it from being taken to the market. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. Next up, please join me for the best of Encounter 2022 from Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, including war crimes against civilians, to women-led protests in the Islamic Republic of Iran. You will hear excerpts from the most memorable programs of the year. The best of Encounter 2022 this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.